equals burn. The propaganda's win, stress feeding on my tension. My countrymen, they love their fiction. Words are now displayed with good intentions.
Welcome to 1-200. That was a bit of a weird long W. I don't know what to do about
welcome
that.
Welcome to 1-200.
Saturday.
WBNR, 1-200.
These are all fantastic. And I'm going to get you both to record stuff and send it to me.
The Sting Your Grandma's radio show. Imagine Dragons Radioactive plays. What's our version of that? It would be Poye, I think.
This is, keep this in, by the way. This is a really good intro.
Yeah, this is fantastic. And it's not confusing to our audience at all. Because they're used to this. They're used to this high key
daytime radio pastiche.
Yeah, camaraderie from the hosts. We're doing independent media and politics. I know every week I say there's too much stuff, and there continues to be too much stuff. I wish I had an entire newsroom, but I don't, because left wing media is poor. We're very poor. And we don't have the money to fund such a thing. But we're going to get to as much as we can in maybe under an hour, maybe over an hour. We'll see how we go.
We're PWC, people without cash.
Oh, man, that feels horrible.
Is he wrong, though?
A little bit. Let's say a little bit.
Well, congratulations, Mr. Moneybags.
Sorry. No, agenda. No. You go through the agenda, Kyle. I'm so sorry.
No, the PWC bit is the... I'm definitely... not a money bags. I want to be very clear about that. So, focusing mostly on New Zealand politics, because too much has happened this week. I guess we got some kind of good news this time around, which is nice. There's stuff to actually laugh about, which we don't often get the opportunity for. But there's also lots of real horrible shit. I don't know which is the worst one, but we're going to be starting with the fast track bill, which is just completely ludicrous. Like, I don't know how it is. I mean, I do know how and why it's been created. It's to really fuck things up and introduce corruption to New Zealand politics at a level we've never seen before.
That does seem to be the thing. Yeah, it seems pretty pretty transparently about plundering our government right now, and doing so with as little oversight as possible. It's been an incredible thing to watch this government, who seem to be very acutely aware of the short nature of their reign. They're really not building for another term. They're just going, oh, okay, we seem to have just squeaked in. It's time to take an absolute hatchet to this country, pull everything we can out, reward all of our friends as best we can, give all of the taxpayer money that we can to personal friends and ourselves, and then we'll just get out and retire on that. And it's shocking to there's this sort of no one was prepared for it. I think we knew they were going to be annoying, we knew they were going to be bad, we knew their policies were going to suck, but I don't think anyone was really ready for just how brazen it was all going to be, and shameless too, the fact that they're just like opening the door to lobbyists to come and sit down with them and co-write bills with them. And this use of urgency as well, where like Labour was so reserved about it, and for good reason. Like, it's the sort of thing you're not supposed to sort of use too often. They used it for the COVID stuff, which was correct. I think that, you know, you had to do it at the time. But generally, I think maybe even because they used it for COVID, they were very gun shy about using it for anything else. And now you're seeing what happens when a very, very shitty government has no such qualms about that sort of undemocratic approach to things.
And we're well past the point where they, they'll continue to claim they have a mandate and that they campaigned on all this stuff. But there's an increasing list of stuff that wasn't effectively campaigned on, wasn't voted for by the majority of people. And they're just shuffling it under the rug as, oh, it was in a coalition agreement. It was in a 100-point list that New Zealand First created in concert with actual conspiracy theorists. So we're forced to do it. I'm sorry, but it's democracy, baby.
Yeah, they released their list after the election, but they released the list. I don't know. And it's happening so quick, you don't even kind of get to react very much to it. And you don't see the sort of responses that people have, because there's just so much sort of shamelessness and cruelty and so much shit going wrong simultaneously that it's hard to keep a sort of handle on everything that they're doing.
Yeah, this fast track bill in particular, I think, I mean, essentially what it does is it allows projects and developments and the like to not need an expert panel to look at it, to approve it. It takes what they're doing with urgency and legislates for it at a level I don't think we've seen in legislation in New Zealand previously, and puts it all at the discretion of three key ministers. And my lord, at least they chose the MPs in the coalition who have some sense of shame. Chris Bishop, everyone knows, well-developed, definitely not corrupt in any way. Not going to take advantage of this. Simeon Brown definitely doesn't do any of this culture war shit. Upstanding member of the National Party. And probably my most respected one of the three, Shane Jones.
Shane Jones! Jonesy! Like,
definitely not going to take advantage of this in any way that could damage New Zealand.
Literally the only reason that we know Simeon Brown is not an actual child is because Chris Bishop hasn't Snapchatted him. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know much about a consent process, but my understanding is that in a consent process, a person makes a proposal and consent is sought before the project goes ahead.
That sounds about right.
What this bill does is eliminates all of the red tape of machine contraption, Rube Goldberg machine, which will kill our children en masse as they enter the mines, and says, we don't need to look at this, actually. The children play Minecraft. They yearn for the mines. We know that they want to go in there. And frankly, I think that it is despicable that anybody would want to look at my increasingly convoluted murder extraction machine and say, can we look at the schematics for this? I think that is an invasion of corporate privacy, Kyle.
Yeah, I'm glad we're finally getting some rights for giant offshore corporates that want to exploit the natural environment of New Zealand.
Yeah, to be able to go into our reserve land, our crown land, natural parks, and be able to just tear them to shreds and denigrate our environment even more than has been done. I mean, like, people thought it was bad when we had an increase in pine tree monocrops under Labor, which also, yeah, not great. Under previous governments, we've seen the effects of that as well with the cyclone and all of the forestry slash and the total lack of regulation there, or at least lack of enforcement of regulation. But this is several levels above that. I was looking at the Radio New Zealand story for it, and really interestingly, they quote from mining advocacy group Stratera, which says, it's justified because red tape is strangling innovation. I have a lot of things to say about this, but first of all, it is not actually your responsibility to quote these people or give them a right of reply. You don't actually have to do that. And two, if people say something like red tape is strangling innovation, don't leave it outside of quotes. And if they did come up with this, that's almost worse that the writer came up with that, you know, that just reproduced that propaganda line of their own steam. But three, don't not ask a follow-up question. Does that make sense? If somebody says red tape is strangling innovation in mining, ask them what innovation can happen in tearing up the hillside. What innovation is there to be had?
Let me field that one. They've found an extremely efficient way to funnel sludge into local rivers so that they don't have to deal with it anymore because the rivers just carry it away. Now, the problem was that the environmental impact reports were sort of creating a lot of red tape around that because it turns out that kills everything in the river and anyone who drinks from it. And so by doing this, by removing this sort of frustrating bureaucratic oversight, they're able to use their innovative new sludge transference machine, and there's no downside. There's no downside, unless you happen to be a fish or you drink water.
It's a bucket line of 9-year-olds, by the way.
It's a person who says, I'm really worried about the scouring of the Shire. I'm really worried that they're not scouring the Shire enough. It's just... and the quote from the Stratera Mining Advocacy Group official is, quote, on the West Coast, miners are waiting an average of 382 days to have their permits processed. And this is just one of the many processes they have to go through. The system is broken and it needs to be fixed and fast. I mean, one of the real two steps that's being done here that seems to have just become kind of accepted in the press is the conflation of the worker with the capitalist that owns the in industrial machinery, right? So calling these people miners, no, the miners are the people who go down there and do an extremely dangerous job for a fraction of the surplus value, which ends up going to the owner who sits in an office somewhere in Sydney with a clean fingernails and like a really fancy tie. You know, that person's not a miner. They're not the same thing. But this happens all the time in various different kinds of news. And I think it's quite concerning that journalists seem to not be able to distinguish those two things, and that they're kind of going along with and accepting what, quote unquote, a spokesperson, i.e. a propagandist for a corporate institution, says.
Yeah, they do this split until Pike River happens, right? And then, well, they let the bosses off and they run away to Australia. And there's never justice for the actual workers who got blown up in a mine. Because of a lack of safety regulation.
And in fact, we're removing the regulations because this won't have to go in front of any sort of consent process. It will just go in front of a minister. And we've already seen how some of the ministers have come from tobacco lobby backgrounds, how there's been a lot of tobacco money that's been funneled into this government through the donor system, through the electoral system. So this is just going to be, like you said, almost a very old school style prohibition mafia quid pro quo system. Whereas before, I think there was a bit of obfuscation about how corruption in New Zealand worked. This is just going to be a one-to-one, like cash changes hands. Here's your consent. That's going to happen. And what's most concerning is that they're backdating this bill. So previously, it's not just sidestepping the RMA, the Resource Management Act, which is the one that everybody knows. There are 11 or 12 different pieces of legislation which require consents across various different facets, right? Fisheries, conservation, wildlife, just building heritage in general, minerals and mining. And it's going to sidestep all of the consent processes and all of those pieces of legislation, but it's going to backdate it. So projects which previously had been shot down by the courts, including like the Environment Court and other tribunals, where judges have and adjudicators have looked at these proposals and have said, no, this is in violation of New Zealand law, those are going to be allowed if the minister just gives their stamp of approval. No other questions asked. Not just ones that are coming in the future, ones which have previously been rejected by the courts on the basis that they ruled that it was illegal and unlawful to do them, those are going to be consented.
Seems good.
It was interesting seeing James Shaw baring some teeth on Twitter the other day when he pointed out, I guess this is that classic thing of as soon as a minister knows that they're on the way out, they just suddenly start sort of showing the full extent of their spine.
Grant Robertson this week too, right?
Yeah, and just both of them just coming out and saying, look, this is all fine and dandy, like this bill sucks, and just a warning to any projects that sort of get their application finalized through this process. Under a new government, you will come back under review. A lot of you will have your once approved projects unapproved, and you will not receive any kind of financial compensation for investments that you've made. So, you know, just beware of that. And I appreciate that they're just like straight up threatening these guys, saying, look, if you think that you could just like hand money over to get your shit approved without any kind of review, we will review you when we get the chance. And if we yank the approval for it, you get nothing. We will not pay you. We will not compensate you. And I'm like, that's how you respond to a bill like this. Like you have to be basically holding it over the head saying, look, you've had this carrot dangled to you. It is completely unreasonable and we will snatch it away at your cost.
I think one of the other things that hasn't come up quite as much just yet, but I'm sure it will, is the nature of extractive industries in New Zealand. We haven't quite got to the point where members of this government are touting the amazing wealth that we're going to be in for if we allow extra mining or environmental destruction. But I think in part that's because they know that there's not much here for New Zealanders. They're talking about jobs a little bit because it's New Zealanders who go into the mines and put themselves at risk. But it's a constant rule that basically everything goes offshore. It's purely extractive here. We're not like a Scandinavian model, public mining and public extraction fund. It all goes over to Australia or Brazil or wherever.
And it's also probably not going to be a lot of specifically New Zealand miners as well, because they're going to do their best to start importing undocumented migrants to do the wet labor as well, so that they can pay them $6 an hour. So it's yeah, the whole thing is a pretty obvious rort. But yeah, it is interesting that they haven't put in a lot of groundwork to lying about the benefits like they usually do.
So any I don't see any problems with this. So I don't see any problems with this. Moving on to the next.
Yeah, the extraction thing is really interesting because I think you can look at the Norway model and you could say, well, if we're not going to care about climate change, at the very least, we could be drilling for oil off Taranaki and that be in go into a national wealth fund for us to then later be able to use it to transition away, right? You could do what Norway does and we could have national wealth, but instead, New Zealand is sort of it's interesting because I think previously we had been just a pure settler colonial outpost at sort of the edge of the world. And now this is what, I mean, there obviously is a class of people who benefit by this in New Zealand. And obviously the racialization stratification of the country means that some people obviously are much more exploited than others. But at the same time, it's kind of interesting how nobody's offended by this being the model of underdevelopment in Africa being replicated here. You know, that a country is just used to be extracted for its natural wealth, which will then go overseas to people in the real imperial core to enrich them. And that's what everybody here is going to be subjected to. It's kind of interesting that there isn't at least like a nationalist sentiment pushback to that in
That's the thing,
response.
yeah, and it is interesting because as much as I hate to phrase it in these terms, it is shocking how little ambition the conservative movement in New Zealand has. It seems to just be run by these like starry-eyed halfwits who they behave and compose themselves like children and are just dazzled by private sector guys and lobbyists who just show up and say, "Yeah, we'll do this and this and this," and tell you what, as soon as you finish up here in this silly old parliament thing, we'll give you a nice board seat, $600,000 a year. You know, that's all there is to it. They have no ideas of their own, which is why, like, as soon as the culture war stuff flares up in America, they start parroting it like Manchurian candidate. The conservative movement in New Zealand is led by people who have no ideas of their own and have no thoughts of their own and have no sort of policy of their own. They're just the laziest, stupidest conservatives I think maybe in any Western world, because they don't care. They have no interests. They have no passion. They have no fire. They have no projects. They're just rubber stamping stuff that they've been presented by other people and going, "Sure, that's what we believe in. I don't know. Can you bring me some more food?" That's
I think many people have said this before, right? But it's interesting that in the United States, there's a kind of distinction between the Republican base and the people who used to rule the party, who were all blue bloods, you know, these
Yeah.
people from Connecticut and who went to Yale, who pretended to be Texans and wear cowboy hats. Like George W. Bush is a prime example of this, sort of pretending to be a fool and a dunce and an idiot on a kind of national stage, in order to kind of fool these yokels into thinking that he was one of them.
Just a good old country boy.
Right, but they're all just fundamentally different. Like a lot of them are really old money, and they are, you know, these people who, what's not came on the Mayflower, but sort of, you know, were from New York aristocratic families when it was New Amsterdam. You know, these people with Van in their name. You know, like Vanderbilts and stuff.
And
And
just
it's kind of.
dynastic families, yeah.
Yeah, right. And it's very interesting that there was that distinction. Those people were all very educated, but they threw red meat to the crowds, who they also looked down upon with condescension as much as or more than possibly, you know, Hollywood liberals sort of did, the rednecks and so on and so forth. And I think it's interesting that here our conservatives have always been the yokels,
Yeah.
and
And
there's
everyone's getting
no
meat
stock
thrown
put
to
in
them.
education. There's no stock put in funding the arts, or in some sense, being conservative in a traditional sense, even in a Burkean sense, right?
Yeah, our conservative movement here is, at this point, at very least, purely neoliberal. And purely selfish. Yeah, I think you're right. There's no thoughts of nation building, or other kind of lofty appeals, to the electorate. It's you get yours and we'll get ours, and that's how it should be.
What are they teaching them at King's College? Because it's not literature and humanities. It's not anything, seemingly.
I do not speak.
just, it's astonishing that we do have a private school system in this country and it keeps turning out the biggest fuckwits you've ever seen in your life.
I think that shouldn't.
The Max Keys, the world's worst DJs.
It seems like that shouldn't be happening, but then it makes complete sense that that is what's happening because it churns them out and it tells them you should go to business school.
Probably one of the last things that, yeah, where somebody write revenue equals profit minus costs or something on the whiteboard. I think one of the interesting things, one of the interesting extracts from Hansard that was published was Shane Jones saying, you know, that parts of conservation, like stewardship land, would not be excluded. Those were up for grabs. You said, quote, if there is a mineral, if there is a mining opportunity and it's impeded by a blind frog, goodbye, Freddy.
He knows what he's doing as well. He's just being nasty for the sake of it. He's like, I'm a cunt and I'm going to be a cunt. And everyone can deal with it. And
yeah, I should say, for the most part, they're all just morons being led by their nose. Shane Jones is actually a moron being led purely by spite. His whole thing is just he has a massive chip on his shoulder because of how many times he's been ousted from Parliament and how many times he's been publicly humiliated. And now he's like, it's my turn. That's his thing. he's the only guy who's applying like a sort of a layer of conscious thought to this. And he's like, yeah, fuck you all.
And he's also deeply corrupt and always has been.
Yes. Yeah. And interestingly, I think for ordinary people, it's very easy to see this as far off and abstract and say, well, climate change is something coming down the line, as opposed to we're already seeing some of the cumulative effects, right? Which is true, like cycling. It was Gabrielle, right? I haven't got that. Yeah. But if you don't want to see any and all flooding, which is going to increasingly become common, be catastrophic, we need wetlands. We need these catchment areas. We need conservation. We need our environment, because without it, everything just gets astronomically worse. And it's not just about carbon capture. It's not something as simple as that. It's the fact that it's an entire ecosystem which works together in concert, you know. And if you want to mitigate those effects, we need this land and we need it to work and do what it is meant to do. And we need to tend to it and we need to have kaitiakitanga over it, right? You know.
And this is the other problem with everything being run offshore, right? Is they have no reason to do that. They can turn us into a fucking rock. And as long as there's enough kind of like protected rock left for billionaire bunkers, then I think they'll be fine with it. They don't really give a shit otherwise. Well, that all sounds bad.
So tell us the bad news.
But it's about to get worse.
I would say, though, if they're willing to give this much away to corporate interests in terms of welfare, they must be doing the same for the people of New Zealand, right?
Yeah.
Kyle, would you be shocked to know the real answer to that?
This has been
continue with your segue. It's brilliant. Like, I'm enjoying it.
No, Thank you. I appreciate it.
They're making the savings where it matters, where they're giving the money to corporate interests, and they're finally cracking down on these bloody freeloaders, as we all know and can all agree, disabled children.
We're giving away our natural wealth, but at least we're getting poverty.
We are providing poverty to children. We're taking away their lunches. We're taking away money from families that have disabled children in them to make sure, because those disabled children were out there having fun. And that's, you know, not on my dime. No, it's important that they barely are getting by and only just eating meals, maybe, if we're feeling generous. They're stripping public funding for everything on every level. They're taking away public transport subsidies is the word I'm looking for. They're taking away public transport subsidies, taking away daycare subsidies, taking away disability subsidies, taking away public school subsidies. Basically, on every level of public life, they're making it harder for the average person.
Subsidies do get in the way of innovation. They strangle innovation.
Yeah, we're cutting all of this red tape so we can have innovations and immiserating people.
It's something else to witness. And you know, we're just seeing like the words at the moment, but this is going to kill people in 6 months. Like, that is coming down the pipeline real fucking quick. I don't think any of us, no, None of us lived through the 80s with political consciousness. I was alive for a little bit of the 80s.
Yeah, so. I was a woke toddler. I was two years old and keeping track of things.
What's this Roger Douglas fucking doing? That was a toddler voice. Clearly.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to ask you to do an actual toddler voice. Very upsetting.
I'd be upset. But yeah, I haven't seen anything like this while I've been around. It's just pure nastiness.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is going to cost. There is going to be an economic cost to this, and it is going to be bad for the country and for most people in New Zealand, including most people in the upper classes and a lot of capitalists. This is going to be bad. This is going to be really, really bad for them. It is going to be good for maybe the top 1% who are going to be able to run around snapping up foreclosed homes and increasing their property empires. I, like, 6 months, people will be dying because they cannot afford to live. Take it out to a year or 18 or 24 months. And like all bad indicators are going to be off the charts. Like I don't see any other outcome there. You're going to have worse mental health. You're going to have more hunger, more poverty, more illness, more crime. We know all the supermarkets are now like fucking video cameraing everyone and already like screaming about retail crime. Yo, what happens when like a million more people are going hungry? Like what do you expect out of this? You've cut the police force as well.
It's very funny how much what's
going to happen? It's going to be a full breakdown. And David Seymour is going to be like, well, we'll just have to make these special economic zones and fucking, Blackwater will fly in with a private army and set up a gated community.
He wants to create the purge.
Put a big fence around Ponsonby.
This is going to significantly just break things. And even when another government comes in 3 years, unless this slows down, that government is not going to be able to put taxes back on most people because there'll be nothing left. They're going to have to go after the very rich, or the country is going to collapse.
Now, some of you keen listeners will know that I'm not only in favor of the Gaza Wall, I think that there needs to be a big concrete wall around my entire compound. Specifically, the New Zealand Army should be protecting me and my interests and my family. As a friend of John Key, I can guarantee you it's going to happen.
Wow, I can't wait for that to happen in real life.
I think the culture of cruelty, as it is being amplified in all facets of mass media, I think, with very little pushback, is already having its effects. Just anecdotally, I recently had a client who has 4 kids, and she's got 1 baby and a very young child as well. And her partner is an abuser, and he's recently just been jailed for exactly that. But he was the only source of income for her. So she's a solo mother, and she is trying to get a benefit. She shoplifted from a supermarket, and I went and talked to the police and said, hey, what kind of sentence are we thinking for this? And they're like, gave me a sentence, and I talked to her and I was like, look, you know, you're dead to rights, but, you know, and gave proper advice and everything like that. And after discussion, she eventually was like, yeah, I think, you know, I could do that, and maybe even reparation, like I can, you know, pay this back slowly, which, you know... Everybody's failed her, right? This entire society's failed her, but she's going to do that. And then I went in front of the magistrate, and she was like, nope, we're marking this off. I'm not giving that. I need probation to canvass whether imprisonment is appropriate for this. I need to look at, you know, this and that and the next thing. And it was just, it was almost shocking. Like, I've never seen that before. And it's happening. And then she doesn't have a phone. Or a phone number, because of course, you know, it's funny that people will talk to about poor people and be like, well, they have smartphones, they can't be that poor. And it's like, well, you need one to exist in the society, so you make other sacrifices, right? But this lady doesn't even have that. And so I was talking to the probation officer and said, oh, well, you'll need to go to her address in order for the provision of advice to the court's report writer to speak to her, because she doesn't have a phone. And she's like, what? She didn't want to steal a phone at the same time as stealing food. And I was like, no, she's She's trying to feed her kids, lady, but just this condescension, this contempt from people that's dripping out of them. And everything about that is just getting worse and worse and worse. And I read through some of the disclosure from police. The loss prevention officer, those classic class traitors, she wrote in her formal written statement, apropos of absolutely nothing, by the way, this woman had a young child with her and a baby. And I think I urge the police to get Oranga Tamariki involved to uplift the children.
Famously healthy, good for children is being uplifted and placed in foster care.
Can you guess what ethnicity she is? Can you take just a stab at that?
I don't want to.
No, but the shocking thing about it is that that has nothing to do with anything that was going on with the offending. It's just pure cruelty.
Yeah.
And this is increasing, I think, among this tension between people who are kind of crabs in the bucket, those who are at the very bottom and those who are a little bit above them, and those who are kind of quote unquote middle class, i.e. have some form of material wealth but don't own the means of production, right? And those people are going at each other, and some of the ones who are being crushed underfoot but are not on the very lowest are so willing to start snipping at the people below them in order to try to scramble for some semblance of crumbs from the top table as this happens.
This is that radicalization of institutions, right? And we've been seeing this pop up here and there. Like there's that guy who was like a contractor for the Ministry of Health and like was like, I'm leaking all this stuff and going on Alex Jones, you know, like, but our systems are created to be evil. And that means that when people are in them and stuff gets bad, it curves towards evil. That's just kind of how it is.
I'm putting that in my Grindr bio. Curves towards evil.
It's, yeah, horrific. Horrific. And that is unlikely to be the worst example. A very clear and horrible example. But wait until you hear about the rich guy who killed someone and got off, right? Or
I think they all get off when they kill people, Kyle.
Got off in more ways than one.
We need to cut the red tape so we can have innovations and evil for our institutions.
And this is essentially what it's become.
I was going to say, not to be the guy who like speaks up for institutions, but I do think that a lot of these things, they're in place for very, very good reason. Like we created, I don't like calling it Oranga Tamariki because I don't like brownwashing what is a very abusive thing, and specifically one of the most heavily scrutinized organizations in New Zealand, which was SIFS. And I often prefer to use that name because I don't really like the idea of letting them escape that legacy and doing so under a banner of a Maori name. But the concept of SIFS is something that every healthy society actually needs to have. There needs to be a government agency whose entire thing is trying to protect children who are in extremely substandard living conditions. Now, the problem with that is it is not governed symmetrically. It is underfunded. They don't have a particularly reliable or well-vetted list of foster homes, which means they occasionally take children out of abusive households and put them into abusive stranger households. And there is a culture mentality, and this is if you look at like sort of stories of people who are going through things like WINS as well, so those citizen facing organizations, because no one's, you know, going out and meeting with the Minister of the Environment. The random Joe blogs doesn't know if there's problems there because they don't have that sort of citizen facing role. But WINS is very similar. There's a culture that has emerged there of us versus them within those organizations, where they say our clients, the citizens, those people out there, are kind of in an adversarial relationship with us because they don't want to lose their children. And so there's this mindset of like, they're kind of the barrier to what it is that we're trying to do. And it gets reinforced internally. And I had a friend years ago who worked at WINS, specifically WINS, who was telling me about how that culture gets sort of metastasized within the organization, because they create almost like a bragging or incentive structure for talking about how good a job you did. And he was explaining how There's like disqualifying questions at WINS that they ask you to determine whether or not you can qualify for job seeker benefit. And he was talking about how one of the games that some of his colleagues used to sort of engage in was trying to find more increasingly creative ways to ask those disqualifying questions in a way that the client wouldn't notice that you'd asked them. So trying to bring them up in sort of preamble conversation so that you could just cross their name off before you even started the interview. So they would joke about how like just they'd strike up a casual conversation with the person before they walked into the room and then ask them like, oh, have you got a partner? Oh, cool. Do you guys live together? In a very, very casual tone. And then as soon as the person confirms that they're currently living under a roof with a partner, they would cross their name off, start the interview and go, sorry, you're actually already disqualified. And they would joke about it. They would say, it's really funny. I had this guy within like 10 seconds of him coming in. And it's not, they're not thinking about the downstream. They're not worried really about the individual person's story. They're not worried about what the purpose of that interview is. They're just mainlining the letter of the law completely in contradiction to the spirit of it. So the purpose of these organizations is to help people who are out of jobs. It is to help children who are not in the right situation. But it gets almost gamified for the employees of how do I win against my client? How do I defeat my client rather than how do I help them?
KPIs, baby.
That's the thing. It's measures of success. It's them trying to determine, did you do a good job or not? And sometimes the fastest way to do a good job and to get through as many clients as possible is to do the shittiest possible job and provide the worst possible care. And so these organizations that probably are needed in a healthy functional society are undermined by financial incentives and workplace incentives and a sort of cancerous managerial culture that has turned them into these cesspits that they are today.
Almost like it was intentional.
Well, it's partially intentional and it's partially passive. It's partially omission. It's a failure to rein in those worst tendencies and manage them out because the managers don't know what they're doing and don't care.
But there was a public service revolution in the 80s, right? So they siloed off all the departments into ministries and then they started parachuting in corporate people to be in management positions.
That's the thing, yeah.
So rather than people rising up from being on the front lines and then becoming managers after working there for 2 to 3 decades, and those were the people running the ministries, it was people who were parachuted in from NGOs or from capitalist organizations, right? From corporations. And that's who has continually been kind of cycled around at the top, and they only fail upwards, you know, as anybody can say about, like, who, what was her name, Gráinne Moss, who was the former head of the Ministry for Children, who had done an awful job running Bupa into the ground, you know, the company in Australia.
Yeah, she did that, right? Failure.
They gave her a glowing review and reference so that they could get rid of her, basically, so she could move into New Zealand's public service with no connection or anything to do with this country or like the specific needs of running the Ministry for Children. And I think it's kind of interesting because there will be people who are good and people who are neutral, and most public servants are kind of neutral in the sense that they would rather not lose their job because it's very lonely and you feel like you're the only person who thinks there's something wrong with what's going on, so you kind of continue it, or maybe you massage it or do something that, you know, slows it down a little bit, but you can't really do that much about it. And that's how these things just kind of keep going, right, on a bureaucratic level. Whereas, I mean, like what you were saying, Ollie, when I was at MSD, I remember, one of, you know, the boss's boss at a huge big meeting of about, you know, 300-400 of us, you know, the conference type things that they do every so often, was like, and I've just talked to our DC of housing. You've heard about a housing crisis in the media, but it's all made up. It's not true, blah, blah, blah. And I just emailed the DC for housing and I was like, well, hey, why are you telling people this? This is not true. You're lying to people, you know? And I got called into a meeting with like my boss's boss's boss. And they were basically like, you cannot do this and you won't have a career here if you do this. And I was like, okay, I'm never working there again. I have no interest in it because this place is evil and I don't like you. So it was like, you know, anybody who has any sort of conscience gets kind of turfed out, except
that's
for
the thing. Yeah.
And I was thinking about, like, I don't know, I was talking to my one of my uncles who has been high up in the public service for quite some time, and like he's Kaitahu, so he is oftentimes called upon to be like, you know, the Maori lens on something, and he really doesn't like it because he's like, well, they will call us in afterwards after they've already decided on something to almost give it like, you know, the Maori seal of approval or something like that.
Oh,
and be,
yeah,
like, oh yeah, we've had somebody look over. And he's like, but you haven't formulated it from a treaty perspective from the beginning, so it doesn't make any sense. And he just really dislikes the way that all of that sort of happens. But it's kind of interesting because he was like, well, I'm kind of on my way out, But I'm really heartened by the fact that I'm trying to cultivate and encourage a lot of the young people on my team who are coming through who are sick of this stuff and want to change it. And a lot of them want to change it from the outside. And he's like, I see a lot of, you know, it was really fascinating because he's like a really high up public service guy. And he was like, look, I think the only way out of this is a revolution. And I think that young people are going to be leading this sort of thing. And there's a lot of revolutionary spirit and fervor. And I was like, shit, man, like if you're saying that and you're like in the absolute core of this country, I think everybody kind of knows that it's in the air, right? But he was kind of hopeful about that. And I thought that was really... there was something heartening about that, you know.
It's really funny with that Maori consultation thing, because I've had that in work as well, where they have an idea, they run with it, they call you in, they're hoping you rubber stamp it, and then you sort of provide a critical lens on it, and they go, no, that's not what we wanted. We wanted you to come and give us your best Maori smile and a nod, and maybe say kia ora, totoko.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they wanted us to do. But as soon as you sort of provide criticism, they suddenly... You could just see the like, racial slurs sort of quivering on their lips as they're trying to think of like what they can get away with saying to you.
It was very funny because he's like, yeah, I'll go into a thing. And then like the person who's the head of this project is a South African who came here 3 years ago or something. And I was like, shit, man, say no more. Heather Duplessy Allen heading up this department, you know?
Yeah.
Talking about foreigners coming in to run key functions of the state. And if you need to head off, Oliver, just dip.
Cool.
Because we've got one more topic to cover. GCSB revelations this week.
Oh, man.
Just wild. But also, wild that it's come out. But we've also known for years that this was going to be something... that was happening.
For context, for anyone listening, the GCSB has had a scandal recently where it has come to light that it was being infiltrated by an international spying ring, and they were using the GCSB resources basically to spy on New Zealanders. And the name of that organization is the GCSB. I had to laugh when this news story broke, because all I could think was, isn't the GCSB basically an international spying organization? Like, isn't it just it's American, right? Like, the GCSB was basically set up by the NSA in New Zealand so that America could spy on New Zealanders. And so it's really funny that suddenly there's this big scandal about some other organization, some other country, some other foreign power was using this thing to spy.
Which hasn't been named yet.
Yeah, Russia, China, maybe. Is using this American spy network. And they're not supposed to be. It's supposed to just be so that we can funnel intelligence back to America.
This is the thing, right? Is when this initially came out with the Snowden files. And when everyone was talking about it, they were saying, yeah, this is set up so that everyone has plausible deniability, so that everyone can be spying on their own citizens and then share the data elsewhere, so they can claim that they're not spying on their own citizens.
Yeah.
That was the entire system.
Purpose of it. And it was such a scandal. I mean, I'm old enough to remember what a scandal it was when it was first created.
Not after the government.
and the fact that it was so intimately tied to organizations like the NSA, that we were out in the streets marching. That was like some of the first protests I ever went to was the anti-GCSB rallies. And now it's just sort of a given. It's just sort of a thing. It's just a thing that we just tolerate now. But it is very funny to hear it being referred to as like this. Wait, it's the wrong foreigners are using this, apparently.
It's the existence of the NSA used to be secret, which is really funny because I drove through Maryland and Virginia not too long ago, and there's like a turnoff where it's like NSA here, only go if you've got like the pass on your car.
No, that's the National Socialist Association.
That's right. It is interesting that I think, I don't know, maybe that's too hopeless to say, like, that people, we've recognized almost that you could have these huge rallies and marches and that it has no effect on the security state, right? And so there will be these revelations, but then the people who are supposed to be fighting against an opposition, like the Labour spokesperson when this came out, said, yeah, I don't think it's likely to happen again. And we have bipartisan consensus on this. Why not?
What's the consensus?
Did we throw these foreign agents in prison? Are we doing an Iran hostage situation? Did we put the GCSB people in prison as punishment for it? Is that why it's not going to happen again? No, we didn't. There were no repercussions. Nothing's happened. Why is it not going to happen again?
How are they getting this information? How do they access this information? Are you redoing the whole system? Are you ripping everything out?
Are you firing everybody? Are you destroying the organization and building a new one? You know, like, why would it not happen again when there are no consequences for it? There's no reason to think that. And it is disheartening to see that opposition people are ones who are dropping the ball on this. I mean, I don't have high expectations for Labour, but at the very least, I would hope that they would push back against the country being run as like a thin puppet sleeve for the CIA, you know, at the very minimum.
Like, it's a huge electoral win as well. Just fucking hit them on this. Like, I guess because they were in government for part of it, they're just like, oh, it'll blow back on us. Yo, like, how would you have known?
Campaign on dismantling it, honestly. Yeah. Just say, we're actually not really getting anything from it.
They couldn't stop March 15.
Yeah.
Like, it was an enormous failure.
Which is crazy, because that guy was terrible at OPSEC. That's what drives me crazy, is he was just, like, talking on open channels with his mates. He told people. That's the craziest thing about March 15 is that he had multiple accomplices, and it doesn't get talked about. He had other guys that knew he was going to do it, that he told was going to do it. One of them showed up on the day and was there cheering him on as he committed the shooting. Who, that guy's now in prison, at least, but for a completely unrelated crime. But like the fact that he was talked about, and these like idea that he was just like a lone wolf operator guy with no friends and no other people. He was in group chats just talking about it. Where was this supposed security apparatus? Where was these guys who knew about him and knew what he was doing? It's bizarre. Just campaign on just say, yeah, we're going to get rid of it. It hasn't served us. It's not serving us.
It hasn't served us. It's not serving us. And it's been hijacked by foreign interests. Like, it should be pretty easy.
Actively compromised. Yeah.
That is one thing New Zealanders hate more than anything else, is people meddling in their business. Like, except if it's mining interests.
But I think when I talked earlier about how sort of mendacious and stupid the conservative movement is, the one thing they're very, very savvy on is the realization that they can get away with a lot more than they thought they could. And I think that's a big thing that's sort of been happening all over the world, is that conservatives generally are saying, oh, okay, they'll get mad, they'll protest, but then we can just kind of keep going. Where these days, scandals that used to end your career, corruption scandals that used to end your career, are just bumps that you just have to ride out and PR your way through, and eventually you just kind of keep going.
They like get you party leadership and make you the prime minister, right? Like,
yeah, I was going to say, look at Shane Jones, Mr. like spending taxpayer dollars on like food and boots, and now he's one of the most powerful people in the country when his career should have ended 10 years ago. And he
was spending it on hotel pornography, right?
That
which is just so funny. Yeah. Because I'm pretty sure that the internet existed then as well.
Yeah.
Why were you doing that, man? Why were you paying for a hotel porn?
He's that old head brain. That's
97-year-old MP still watches porn the old way.
Yeah, dude's got his...
That'll be incomprehensible to anybody not on Twitter.
His pay-per-view, and he's probably got a big collection of porno mags at home as well. That's his style.
It's flicking between WWE.
I need to put a fucking stop to this one. Like, I do not want to get into Shane Jones's habits.
So. You don't want to go into detail about Shane Jones beating his mate. That's valid.
Well, we're already too much. Already too much. But it's happened. It's happened. And we're not going to say anything else. But thank you for joining us, Oliver. You've got to dip.
Yes, I do have to dip earlier, unfortunately, but you guys have fun. Have a good morning.
Perfect. Thanks so much.
Well, lots of bad stuff.
Yeah, but just on that story as well, I was going to say that there is a lot more involvement between our security services and overseas ones than a lot of people. I mean, I think most people understand what the Five Eyes is now, that because we can't spy on quote-unquote our own citizens, it means that the other four countries will spy on New Zealand citizens and then share that information back. It's like a little hop, skip, and a jump to get around it. That's pretty well understood, I think, by people because of the Kia and because of Kim.com, which, you know, he did maybe one thing right-ish, sort of, even in a bad way. You giving props to Kim.com in the year of our Lord 2024 is
absolutely not.
It's certainly a decision, but I've made it and I'll stick to it. But it's not just signals intelligence. SIGINT is also human intelligence, right? Like I remember I wrote a story some years ago, which didn't really get picked up. I think it's still floating around there somewhere, that they'll, if you looked through some of the WikiLeaks cables and a dump that happened, you know, maybe 6-7 years ago, that it was found out that New Zealand, like the SIS itself, was supplying human intelligence resources and assets to interfere with the French presidential elections in 2012. So for whatever you heard about Russiagate and, like, you know, Russia interfering with the US elections, we do that as well. And we did do that in France, at least.
But we have to do that because otherwise Russia would get us. So
and it's supposed to be a Western country that's friendly, right? But you've got to have the right people in there. You know, you've got to have the Macron or something like that. You can't have the... every time I'm on a podcast, I totally blank names. Jean Mélenchon.
No.
Right?
You can't kind of have... you know, we have to keep Le Pen out. That's what they're really doing, isn't it?
Yeah. Saving democracy by enhancing the clandestine state. And nobody will ever explode from that oxymoron because we just get to say that sentence all the time, apparently, in the news. What was the subject that you wanted to move on to?
Winston Peters got fucked up. He said some
dumb shit.
He
got knocked down. Is that what you're saying?
He got knocked down.
He got up again.
Maybe. I don't know. He's still there. Like, he probably didn't really get knocked down. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah.
But it is very funny. So Winston Peters tends to walk on stage to I Get Knocked Down by Chumbawamba. Mm-hmm. Is that what the song's called? That's just the lyric.
It's called Tub Thumping, I think.
That's right. That's correct. I had forgotten. And then he compared the COVID response to Nazism.
Mm-hmm.
And Chumbawamba, anti-Nazi.
Yeah, it's one of the first times I've seen in print. I'm sure music magazines say this all the time, but certainly in New Zealand, it's the first time I've seen in print people just openly saying, yeah, Chumbawamba is an anarchist band. Like, and they do a lot of propaganda, socialist propaganda in their music and in their miscellaneous other sort of publications that surround it, like a constellation. You know, they had, was the ABCs of Socialism or Anarchism or something like that? They have, in any case, they're like a very politically involved band. You know, as much as or more than something like Rage Against the Machine or whatever. And it was kind of interesting that that was actually said, because that's kind of almost a curse word, right? Or you used to not really be able to say social. Certainly anarchist is something you just was
no,
like...
No, it's been replaced by Antifa. So, like...
The Joker is that or something. Or, like, some, you know, some fictional character who just blows stuff up as opposed to being, like, you know, direct democratic movement. and ethos and philosophy
and a band philosophy. That's famous, so a famous band that people love, but yeah, they were like, stop using our music, bro.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what happens, but it's, you know, it's about all we get in the current age, mm-hmm. when people in power do this kind of stuff, is the hope that someone from pop culture will tell them they're not allowed or that they're taking legal action. God, I hate it here.
It's the only people who push back. It was kind of interesting that I think, I mean, not to give them, not that it's giving them an unexpected level of credit, but I think most people wouldn't expect that with the level of vapidity of, you know, celebrity culture, that musicians would know enough about, or at least look enough into, a marginal figure in a marginal country like New Zealand, like Winston Peters, to be able to say, no, his particular policies are prejudicial and bigoted, and here's why. But Chumbawamba went and did that and actually made quite a thoughtful, considered statement about it, and a rebuke that was specific and targeted towards him. It wasn't, you're a right winger, we don't like you. It was like, no, this is why he's not allowed to use it, and this is why it's against what our band stands for and what the song is meant to be about, really.
It wasn't an Eminem, like, don't use my copyright, bro.
Yeah, the 8 Mile Style case is really funny because it's just, I'm caught between the fact that it's really funny that the National Party ate shit, and also that it's also one of the worst musicological analyses ever put to paper. And the expert witnesses are very obviously just like, I'm getting paid to say this, and therefore I'm trying to spin as much bullshit as possible to people who don't know anything about music theory. it's a great case to read if you know even the most minimal amount about, like, the history of popular musical music or, like, Western common practice period theory, right? It's so good. It's so good in that it's really horrible to your eyes.
I was going to say I'll put a link to that in the summary, but I'm not going to.
Don't do that. Don't read case law if you're like, A, not a lawyer, and B, it's a Saturday and you're off time. Like, do that. That's
don't do
bad.
It to yourself. Don't do it. I'm not putting that out into the world. So one small win. Mm-hmm. One small win. I hate to keep ending it on this, but where the fuck is our opposition?
Yeah.
We've seen some really good stuff from environmental orgs, Forest and Bird and Greenpeace. Mm-hmm. Are kind of leading the charge against the fast track law. But I don't know, man, where's the organizing? Yeah, people on the Discord last couple of days saying, where are the unions? We're about to cut 25% of the healthcare sector or of the Ministry of Health workers. They're going to go after public service jobs to an enormous degree. What's the PSA doing? All of these people, you need to get fucking into gear. This government's not going away. They're going to destroy you. Where do you think, one, you get your money from? And two, how much of that money do you think you're going to get when a quarter of your members are kicked out the door? They're not going to be paying the union fees. I'm sorry. This is an attack on the union organizing as much as anything else at this point, and they're going to come for you harder. This is just the first volley. Please get your axe into gear.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Hepkins has said, it's interesting the way this is framed, because the story is that Hepkins is defending the increase in public servants under Labour, when the story should be about national cutting. I mean, Ministry of Primary Industries is one thing, and that's bad for a whole host of reasons, but the Ministry of Health having people cut when we still have a deadly virus raging around this country, and some of the worst that it's been, certainly worse than it was in the early pandemic, right? Just because we don't have any controls over it.
There are definitely a fair few more people dying.
Yes, yeah, and that we're in that situation, and the government has looked at the Ministry of Health and has said, yeah, we're just going to shave people off this workforce.
And all these workforces were already historically underfunded and under-resourced and didn't have enough staff.
Yeah, and when COVID first hit, Labour had on its books, in the process of trying to quote-unquote reform the health sector, but really we don't have a health system. We have about five different health systems, because you've got the hospitals, the GPs, the mental health services. So they're all really separate and split from each other. So they're trying to do five reform projects at once, rather than kind of having it actually make sense with a nationalized system and doing that first. And then COVID hit. And then as they were sort of coming out of the lockdown periods and through the kind of traffic light frameworks, they kind of tried to starting that up again, but also weren't appropriately dealing with it in terms of funding. I mean, we seem to have forgotten that, again, Hepkins defending, quote unquote, the increase of jobs and the public service
during a pandemic. You don't need to defend that.
No, I mean, first of all, the population's growing, so just naturally it's going to go up. I don't understand how that's even in question. But secondly, Labour's response to the hard work that was done by our oftentimes maligned and sometimes for good reason, as we've just discussed, but sometimes not for good reason, bureaucracy, was, these people actually did do a lot of hard work to make sure that all of the infrastructure was in place, that we didn't have total national collapse, right, in the early pandemic. Labour's response to that was nurses asked for a pay rise and they spat in their face and said, no, fuck off. And they said, you know what, we're actually freezing the pay for all public servants.
People had their pay frozen.
You're gonna have a real, you're gonna have a cut in real terms for what you did. And that was what Labour did. So I don't align with, gonna say this every episode that I'm on, but I don't align with, the stands, the celebrity culture type people who are in quote unquote Labour's camp, whether on Twitter, whether in the wider media, whether on other social media platforms, whether in your daily life, although I think that's a derangement which mostly exists online, and say, oh no, but national's so much worse, so therefore don't even look at Labour. It's like, what are they doing now? And what did they do to make it possible? How did they smooth the pillow for National to then go and do a lot of the stuff, right? How did they make it easier? And how could they have made it so much harder for them to ever come in and vandalize
it? So many ways
they
could have done that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they could have just added a tax. And then being like, we have so much money now. Look at all this cool stuff we can do. Well, you better not take that away because people will be pissed. This is very easy stuff. This is very easy, just very basic electoral politics. Like,
maybe it's a little too conspiracy brain, but I almost half believe that they deliberately made it so that fair pay agreements wouldn't come back in unless they were voted back in as like a carrot and a stick to dangle in front of the
electorate. They absolutely
were
trying to do that. It's not conspiracy brain. This is how they work as an electoral strategy. Like they're so fucking gone.
You could have a nice thing instead of being like, no, we're just doing this straight away. You've got a nice thing. Look how much better your life is under Labour.
Yeah, they
and
could
then
have
people
said,
have a reason to vote for you.
Yeah, yeah. Too
instead
hard.
We have this.
Too hard. Well, what a much more depressing note to end it on. thanks for joining us again, Simon.
That is quite all right. Hopefully they have pitched my voice correctly in the edit.
We're going to pitch it lower. It's going
we're
down
to do
the,
it even lower until
it's going down to the
mines.
All right. That's been another episode of 1 of 200. We'll be back next week, maybe. I think we have a special episode coming up early next week. Fingers crossed.
Uh-huh.
Fingers crossed we do. Yes. Keep an eye out for that. It's a cool surprise. I'm not involved with it, so even better. hopefully dropping during mid next week. Otherwise, we'll catch you on the weekend for current events once again. Nice. Where we can't cover everything because too much has happened.
If artifices are, then I'm living a pointless life, but learning all your lessons from your politics is no distinction. The words upon now with good intentions, and I'll admit that I'm at a loss for what to say when they quote this as a cost we ought to stay. Cause I live amongst the people every day in this vindictive, forgetful fucking rain. It feels like we're on the road to hell.